Good morning to all of you. We're grateful we can be together, and I appreciate you being here. I am not preaching this lesson today because JD is preaching some lessons on the role of the man in the house, the husbands and fathers. But 2 or 3 weeks ago, I was coming in, head of the classroom first, puts my computer over there. I'm going to name them. They won't be too embarrassed, but I thought Abby Houston was putting her coat, hanging her coat up, and Danielle walked in holding Hudson, and she walked by, and I'm kind of walking past him. Abby said to Danielle, "Congratulations." Well, that just got my interest peaked. I can tell you what I first thought, but that didn't last very long. So I looked at Abby, I said, "Can I guess that you just congratulated her because they're 5 minutes early?" She said, "Yes." And this lesson is on congratulations, moms, for the remarkable hard work that you do. I counted in this church about 75 children. I say around or about. That doesn't mean we have a half. Don't you like those studies where they say families now have 2.3 kids? I'm looking for the 0.3 child running around, but anyway. About 75 children still living at home. And that makes about 28, 29 moms that are part of this church that may be some of the most important people in this congregation, without question. Her name was Nancy Hanks. Her last name was Lincoln. That was her married name, or her maiden name. She had a young boy named Abraham. He was 9 years old when she passed away. She's buried in a grave in southern Indiana. A little simple headstone there, Nancy Hanks Lincoln. Later on, President Abraham Lincoln made this statement, "All that I am or hope to be, I owe to my angel mother." Barbara Bush, since we're talking about political characters, said, "Your success as a family and our success as a nation," as she spoke to a group of women, "depends not on what happens inside the White House, but on what happens inside your house." Amy Barrett, who was appointed to the Supreme Court just about 4 years ago, and she said, "What greater thing can you do than raise children?" She said this to an audience in Washington, D.C. "That's where you have your greatest impact on the world." She has 7 children. So I want to spend a little time today in being encouraging and thanking you and congratulating the mothers who work so very hard and sometimes with very little appreciation. How many of you have ever had the reaction of mothers, and you're out at the grocery store or some woman comes up to you and says, "Do you work?" And they may sometimes add this, "Do you work outside the home?" But no, usually it's, where do you work? And you stop and say, "Well, I'm a stay-at-home mom. I work at home." And she looks at you with this look like, "Well, I'm sorry." And you graciously listen to that and you nod and smile with that meek and quiet spirit. And she drives off in her nice car and to her nice job and her nice house. Godly mothers who pattern their lives after the Lord's teachings simply will not be honored by the world in which we live. Your value is not held very high by worldly people. And my exhortation today is we need to make sure we're honoring you. We need to make sure the church is honoring our mothers. And just every now and then, like today, And no, I'm not going to wait till May to say something about our moms. Work? Are you kidding me? Have you ever heard about the man, the husband, who got home from work one day, hadn't had a particularly good day at work, and he wanted to tell his wife about it and did. But he got home about time to eat supper. And I sat down around the supper. His wife had fixed a nice meal for the family. And after eating it, enjoying it, he looked across the table and said, "What did you do all day?" And she said, "Oh, not much." And that was the end of that. The next day when he got home, he found her sitting on the couch, eating popcorn and watching Hallmark movies. Water dripping from the ceiling because one of the kids has stopped up the tub and turned the water on, still running. Baby running around, diaper hadn't been changed all day. 8, 9, 10-year-old were told, "Hey, fix your own lunch." That was a disaster. Still smell the smoke. Clothes everywhere. Toys everywhere. The dog hadn't been taken outside the house, so he'd taken care of his business everywhere. And the husband looked at her and said, What are you doing? What have you been doing?" And she looked at him and smiled and said, "Oh, not much." That's the last time that man said that. I think we appreciate the little things. The order of a home. That mothers do every day. And that's not to mention those of you who are homeschooling, teaching your children, the doctor's visits, the taxi drivers to practice, and etc. that you've decided is important to you. Have you known women who gave up careers to be a mom? I have. I've known families that have made financial sacrifices that knew that they didn't need both incomes. And they had to cut back in some ways so she could stay at home. Husband and dads, and this will be the only thing I say about them today, not to get over too much into JD's area, need to learn to bear some of their burdens. The book that was recommended to me many years ago, written by Willard Harley, is called His Needs, Her Needs. It's a marriage counselor who, after 25 years, said that he thought there were about 5 different needs a woman and a man had. A woman had and a man had. And one of those for a woman was family commitment. She just needed to know her husband was committed to the kids and helping her take care of them. And sometimes you'll need to be there on time, especially if you decided, and I hesitate to say this, but you know, some of you have got 3 and 4 and more kids. Is that harder than having one? Well, there'll be challenges no matter what, but a lot of children, and sometimes she'll need you to come home and help out around the house. Many days she's tired. Maybe certain times of the month she needs a little extra help. She'll need you there. Commitment. The best thing a man can do for his kids is love their mother. I don't know who said it. I read it a long time ago. I think it's great. And gentlemen, we need to be first in line to praise her. The husband of the virtuous woman in Proverbs 31 said he praises her. And this is what he says. "Many daughters have done well, but you excel them all." You know, your wife needs to hear you say, "I appreciate what you do. I'm thankful for you. Obviously could not do this without you. I'm thankful you're my wife. And I'm thankful you're the mother of my children." And the rest of that week will go really well for you. Don't do it for that reason. She's the manager of the home. In 1 Timothy 5 and verse 14, when Paul was exhorting young widows to marry and to have children and to manage the house. Now this is going to be, you're going to listen very carefully to this, and guys, don't get too nervous about this, but the word translated here, manage, means to be the head or the ruler of the family. And it comes from a word that in other places has reference to the male and calls him the master of the house. The mother is the master of the house. Now she obviously does that under the headship of her husband. But she's a manager. And a husband trusts her to do that. These are several statements made in the great chapter, Proverbs 31. The heart of her husband safely trusts her. He trusts her with finances. I involved counseling a couple, years ago, and he had just found out that his wife had run up $30,000 worth of credit card debt. He didn't have any idea. And she'd been coming to him saying, you know, we're struggling financially. He didn't know that. It'd be hard to trust. But not this woman. You trust her. She rises while it's yet night and provides food for her household. She's not afraid of snow for her household, for all her household is clothed with scarlet. She watches over the ways of her household and does not eat the bread of idleness. Give her of the fruit of her hands and let her own works praise her in the gates. Trust her. And by the way, something I've heard in recent years, Kenita Hall, the late wife of Sewell Hall, after David Maxon was preaching at Embry Hills at the time, commented about this passage, preached about this text in Proverbs 31, and she came up to him, this older saint, came up to him and said, what we need to communicate to women is Proverbs 31 is not a snapshot of their life, it's a movie. It's not just every day, this is what it looks like. It's a progression even as women become the woman that's described in that chapter. Some women can read that and be absolutely overwhelmed by her. But that's not the purpose of the passage. It just gives you the goal of becoming those things. A woman has been taught to be a homemaker. She manages the home. As we read in our text a while ago, she's a homemaker who loves her husband and her children. There's been discussion about the word homemaker. And I don't know that it means that she is, that that's mostly about doing the dishes and the laundry and cooking and cleaning. The passage, the word probably has more emphasis on the people more than the place. She's caring for the people, managing the people, the little people that are at her feet. And I also want to notice from that passage that she is taught by the older women to love her husband and to love her children. Why do you need to be taught to do that? I thought it would be just rather natural. It's just a matter of feelings, right? Wrong. You learn to love, even on those days when we don't act particularly lovable. There'll be days you know your children are not going to be lovable. But you love them. And you do for them what's best. The emphasis, I believe, in homemaking is the care of the children. It may include some of those other things, but that's a matter of judgment about how clean and neat the house needs to be. I think some people avoid hospitality when they have children because, you know, they don't want to invite somebody over in case everything just isn't proper and put in its place. Don't do that. We know you live there. We want to know that you live there. Mothers bring something to the table that fathers absolutely cannot. But we were gentle, and Paul uses this, and I believe J.D. referenced this a while back, but we are gentle among you just as a nursing mother cherishes her own children. A mother brings something to the table in this relationship that a father just doesn't bring to the table. In fact, I'm going to go back to 1 Thessalonians for a minute, because in the very same text, Paul makes a contrast of how he handled and treated the Thessalonians when he first came there to preach. In verse number 11, after the verse I just read, verse 7, in 11 he says, "As you know how we exhorted and comforted and charged every one of you as a father does his own children." But the mother is pictured as being gentle, nursing mother, cherishing her own children. The man and woman bring something different to the relationship, and it's a benefit for the kids. Love this passage. And it's made in a messianic context, by the way, and that's something else you can study about it. But I believe David, when he wrote it, "But you are he who took me out of the womb, you made me trust while on my mother's breast." I don't have to tell you the studies that point to the importance of a child being nurtured in those very early days, early years. And just this picture of the child being brought to, when the baby has been born and cleaned up, they take the baby. Where do they lay the baby? On mom's feet. I don't think so. Lay it right across her chest. And that child is going to learn to trust, because he's got a mother who's going to be there to take care of her. Moms, you're the trainers at home. You train your children. Mothers are teachers of their children. And one of the things that we have to do, and this applies obviously to both of us in the home, but you're going to return them to the Lord. That's your goal. Oh, if they're good little basketball players and they're smart and maybe even get so smart, they do so well in school, they get an academic scholarship somewhere. And all of that's great. I mean, all of that can be good, and if they're just good at things and smarter and just have some more intelligence others don't have. Anyway, if they have whatever they have, you're returning them to the Lord. Hannah, you remember, wanted a child so badly. She cried and prayed, and God answered her prayer. And she promised the Lord in 1 Samuel 1:28, "Therefore I have also lent or returned him to the Lord," as she told Eli. "As long as he lives, he shall be lent or returned to the Lord." You have a remarkable opportunity to turn your children back over to the Lord. That's your goal. Training obviously involves teaching, admonishing, instructing. A lot of that going on. You fill your hearts with His Word. We have underestimated the importance of those early years. I've read child psychologists like James Dobson and others, and can't even think of another one I was getting ready to think of. But anyway, they make statements like how important those first 6-7 years are. And they make some pretty strong statements about a child's personality. Maybe not personality so much, but some of their character, some of the traits that they're going to carry with them the rest of their life is going to be determined in those first 6-7 years. Now listen, I don't want that to scare you. Because I will tell you that when my kids were 7 years old, I was looking at Betsy and going, "We have failed miserably." I mean, there were days where But anyway, the point is, you're putting things in their heart and how important that is. I believe our little children are born into the world not depraved, as Calvinists teach, but they're born not knowing good and evil, and they're going to learn it from the people that raised them. And the people that we allow to have an influence on their life, and that may be that screen they're looking at. So your children, if you want them to grow up and watch Bluey or whatever else is going on, I'm learning all of this from my 4-year-old granddaughter. And you fill and let them watch TV and you let them watch cartoons and movies and whatever. besides some of the the things that might need to consider about just the screen time itself, but those are wonderful years to be filling them with the Word of God, and they're listening, sometimes even when you don't think they are. I think it's just important. And as one of you had pointed out, you were teaching your young children to memorize the fruit of the Spirit. And I thought that was outstanding. You need to know the Scriptures. And you need to have some convictions about them. Timothy had learned this about salvation from the Old Testament Scriptures that he had when he was growing up, from his mother and his grandmother, who were faithful women. From all indications, by the way, and I didn't fail, I had this in my notes earlier. I'm not leaving out single moms. I've seen single moms, I've seen women that have had children out of wedlock. They have repented of that, acknowledged their sins, and then have just made a grand effort to raise their children. I've seen women that have gone through divorces who have raised their children, and their children love the Lord. But we're not leaving you out. And apparently Timothy's father wasn't a believer, and so here's a woman married an unbeliever who was able to raise her son to love the Lord, and you can do that too. You need to have convictions. You had a conviction about right or wrong so that when you teach your children, they know that you believe what you're saying to them is true. And that's important because you're going to be the one doing most of the teaching. You're going to be the one, the man's going to be off working as he should be. And you're going to have these kids, whether you homeschool, they go to public school, and you send them off to school, you're going to have those first years, it's going to be you mostly. Now, dads, fathers, train up your children in nurture and admonition of the Lord. When you get home, you get a chance to teach. I mean, if a man's working 40, 50 hours a week, the mom's got them the 40, 50 hours. And so it's important that you're teaching them the Word of God, getting the Word into their heart. And moms, you got to discipline when it's needed. It's pretty evident that a young child, when they are disobedient to you, they need to be disciplined promptly. I believe Proverbs says that. They need to be disciplined promptly because you can't put it off. You can't, the two-year-old has done something that's disobedient, and then you can't wait the next day and spank them because they forgot about that. They got to be connected. The disobedience and the punishment. I say all of that because when they're that age, this doesn't work. Wait till your daddy gets home. Now that works when they get older. Boy, I didn't want to hear that. Although I will tell you, my mother was the more stern in the family than my dad was. A little side note, my mother read Dr. Spock's book about raising kids. And that book came out, I think, in the 50s, 60s. And what he ended up being known for among brethren is that he was opposed to corporal punishment. He was opposed to spanking a child. The book was about basic things about taking care of the health of children, and it was a helpful book, but it taught, he was opposed to. And I understand that later on he changed that view, but that in the book he was opposed to spanking kids. And the joke in our house was my mom paid no attention to that part of the book. And I'm glad she didn't. She did it early when it needed and didn't have to be done later. This is my last point. Bring this lesson to a close. A couple of things I want to say here in just a moment. And I put this in the notes, and this needs more development than I'm going to give it. And it probably begins to kind of come into those teenage years, and there's a lot more to say about raising our teenagers. I'm going to simply say this about it. If you do really well the first 10, 12 years, it'll be easier, even though it can still be terribly challenging as your kids go through the changes and seeking independence. I read a story once where a young woman, after growing up, made this statement. My mother wanted a friend. I wanted a mom. neither of us got what we needed. And I see moms sometimes trying to be like their kids. Ask your teenagers if they want you dressing like them. Or talking like them. Using the same lingo. Now, I'm not saying that. I mean, be very careful about this. You have a relationship with them. And you love them and interact with them. But I just found that our kids, they just want you to be a mom. And that means, again, sometimes being stern. That sometimes means that this is no. No means no. And so the friendship comes later. It's a wonderful thing. And I'm not saying it doesn't develop in those teenage years, late teen years, but it develops later. I've seen that with Betsy and Amanda, I think, because Amanda's very independent. When she left home to go to school, she was ready. She wasn't crying. We were, but she was. She's ready to be on her own. And that didn't mean they didn't have a relationship, but I have seen later where she has turned around and appreciates. And sometimes that's what will happen. Your kids will turn around and appreciate who you were and how you treated them, how you raised them, even though that right now they may not. When you were a mom, they will look back and they will appreciate that, and a friendship will grow out of that. Well, anybody heard this? The hand that rocks the cradle is the hand that rules the world. I didn't realize that that wasn't just a statement, that was a poem written by William Ross Wallace a long, long time ago. In fact, it was written in 1865. Blessings on the hand of women, angels guard its strength and grace. In the palace, the cottage, or the hovel, oh, no matter where the place. Would that never storms assail it, rainbows ever gently curled, for the hand that rocks the cradle is the hand that rules the world. Infancy's the tender fountain. Power may with beauty flow. Mothers first to guide the streamlets from their souls unresting grow. Grow on for good or evil, sunshine streamed or evil hurled, for the hand that rocks the cradle is the hand that rules the world. Women, how divine your mission here upon our natal sod. Keep, oh, keep the young heart open always to the breath of God. All true trophies of the ages are from a mother love impearled, for the hand that rocks the cradle is the hand that rules the world. Blessings on the hand of women, fathers, sons, and daughters cry, and the sacred song is mingled with the worship in the sky. Mingles where no tempest darkens, rainbows evermore are hurled, for the hand that rocks the cradle is the hand that rules the world. So to every mother, my word today, as you do your very best to raise your children in the Lord, is to say to you, congratulations. You are to be praised. Let's sing a song of encouragement for you to come to Jesus. That's not a lesson about that today. And if you're thinking about that and need more instruction, I guarantee you we'd be glad to take all the time we need here in the next few moments afterwards. But think about these things. We have a wonderful God who's instructed us and led us and taught us. And we have a lot of older folks with wisdom to help us understand what it means to be a mother. And so you've got a lot of support of each other, a lot of encouragement. You do that for each other. But let's make sure all of us are encouraging them as we should. All right. God is great, good. Jesus died for you. Had some good thoughts today at the Lord's Supper to be reminded of what he did for us. And I want to encourage you to think about what he's done for you. And if today's the day you need to obey the gospel, that you're ready to give your life to Jesus, we want to help you do that. If you're ready to be baptized for the remission of your sins, we would be thrilled with the angels of heaven to rejoice to assist you in doing just that. Will you come as we stand and as we sing?